The following program is rated U for universal audiences and is considered suitable for listeners of all ages.
Dream Realm Enterprises presents Showcase Classics, an anthology of classic stories and radio theater revivals for your listening pleasure. And now for our featured presentation of Jane Eyre.
Would you walk this way, Mom?
Mrs. Fairfax, I suppose.
How do you do, my dear? I am afraid you have had a tedious ride. John drives so slowly. You must be cold. Come to the fire. I dare say your own hands are almost numb with cold. Leah went to fetch us some hot tea and cut us a sandwich or two.
That's very kind of you.
Now then, draw nearer to the fire and warm yourself. You've brought your luggage with you, haven't you, my dear?
Yes, Mum.
I'll see it carried to your room.
Shall I have the pleasure of seeing Miss Fairfax tonight?
Oh, what was that, my dear? I'm a little deaf.
Will I see Miss Fairfax tonight?
Miss Fairfax? Oh, you mean Miss Verence. Verence is the name of your future pupil.
Indeed. Then she is not your daughter?
No, I have no family. I am so glad you are come. It will be quite pleasant living here now with a companion. To be sure, it is pleasant at any time, for Thornfield is a fine old hall, rather neglected of late years, perhaps, but still, it is a respectable place. Yet, you know, in winter time, one feels dreary, quite alone in the best quarters. I say alone. Leah is a nice girl, to be sure. She and her husband, John, are very decent people. But then you see, they are only servants, and one can't converse with them on terms of equality. One must keep them at due distance, for fear of losing one's authority. I'm sure last winter, it was a very severe one if you recollect, and when it did not snow, it rained and blew. Not a creature but the butcher and postman came to the house, from November till February, and I really got quite melancholy with sitting night after night alone. I had Leah in to read to me sometimes. But I don't think the poor girl liked the task much. She felt it confining. In spring and summer, one got on better. Sunshine and long days make such a difference. And then, just at the commencement of this autumn, little Adele Verence. A child makes a house alive all at once. And now you are here, I shall be quite happy. But I'll not keep you sitting up late tonight. It is on the stroke of 12 now, and you have been traveling all day. You must feel tired. If you have got your feet well warmed, I'll show you your bedroom. I've had the room next to mine prepared for you. It is only a small apartment, but I thought you would like it better than one of the large front chambers. To be sure, they have finer furniture, but they are so dreary and solitary. I never sleep in them myself. What? Out already? I see you're an early riser. How do you like Thornfield?
I like it very much.
Yes, it is a pretty place. But I fear it will be getting out of order. Unless Mr. Rochester should take it into his head to come and reside here permanently. Or, at least, visit it more often. Great houses and fine grounds require the presence of the proprietor.
Mr. Rochester? Who is he?
The owner of Thornfield. Did you not know he was called Rochester?
I thought Thornfield belonged to you.
To me? Bless you, child, what an idea. To me. I am only the housekeeper, the manager. To be sure, I am distantly related to the Rochesters by the mother's side. Or at least my husband was. He was a clergyman, incumbent of Hay, that little village yonder on the hill. And that church near the gates was his. The present Mr. Rochester's mother was a Fairfax, and second cousin to my husband. But I never presume on the connection. In fact, it is nothing to me. I consider myself quite in the light of an ordinary housekeeper. My employer is always civil, and I expect nothing more.
And the little girl, my pupil?
She is Mr. Rochester's ward. He commissioned me to find a governess for her. He intended to have her brought up in Shire, I believe. Here she comes now. Good morning, Miss Adele. Come and speak to the lady who is to teach you, and to make you a clever woman someday.
C'est la ma gouvernante!
Oh, she is French, then.
Adele was born on the continent, and, I believe, never left it till within 6 months ago. When she first came here, she could speak no English. Now she can make shift to talk it a little. I don't understand her. She mixes it so with French, but you'll make out her meaning very well, I dare say.
Faites attention, s'il vous plaît.
Ah, you speak my language as well as Monsieur Rochester does. I can talk to you as I can to him. Madame Fairfax is all English. Mademoiselle, what is your name?
Eyre. Jane Eyre.
Eyre? Bah, I cannot say it. Well, our ship stopped in the morning. Before, it was quite delight. At a great city, a huge city with very dark houses and all smoky. Not at all like the pretty clean town I came from. And Monsieur Rochester carried me in his arm over a plain to the land. And we got into a coach, which took us to a beautiful large house, larger than this and thinner, called an hotel. We stayed there nearly a week. I and Monsieur Rochester used to walk every day in a great green place full of trees, called the park. And there were many children there beside me, and a pond with beautiful birds in it that I fed with crumbs.
Can you understand her when she runs on too fast?
Rather well. I studied under Madame Pierrot at Lowood, and did my best to always converse with her en français.
I see.
May I play a song for you, mademoiselle?
Oh, that would be lovely.
Oui, then I shall play you a song Mama used to dance to.
In what order you keep these rooms, Mrs. Fairfax? No dust, no canvas coverings. Except that the air feels chilly, one would think they were inhabited daily.
Why, Miss Eyre, though Mr. Rochester's visits here are rare, they are always sudden and unexpected. And as I observed that it put him out to find everything swathed up and to have a bustle of arrangement on his arrival, I thought it best to keep the rooms in readiness.
Is Mr. Rochester an exacting, fastidious sort of man?
Not particularly so, but he has a gentleman's tastes and habits, and he expects to have things managed in conformity to them.
Do you like him? Is he generally liked?
Oh, yes. The family have always been respected here. Almost all the land in this neighborhood, as far as you can see, has belonged to the Rochesters, time out of mind.
Well, but leaving his land out of the question, do you like him? Is he liked for himself?
I have no cause to do otherwise than like him. And I believe he is considered a just and liberal landlord by his tenants. But he has never lived much amongst them.
But he has no peculiarities? What, in short, is his character?
Oh, his character is unimpeachable, I suppose. He is rather peculiar, perhaps. He has traveled a great deal and seen a great deal of the world, I should think. I dare say he is clever, but I never had much conversation with him.
In what way is he peculiar?
I don't know. It is not easy to describe. Nothing striking, but you feel it when he speaks to you. You cannot be always sure whether he is in jest or earnest, whether he is pleased or the contrary. You don't thoroughly understand him, in short. At least I don't. But it is of no consequence. He is a very good master.
Did you like it, Mademoiselle?
Oh, very much, Adele. You will have to teach me that tune you were playing. Was it your maman that taught you that piece?
Yes! And now shall I dance for you?
No, that will do. But after your maman went to the Holy Virgin, as you say, with whom did you live then?
With Madame Frédéric and her husband. She took care of me, but she is nothing related to me. I think she is poor, for she had not so fine a house as Mama. I was not long there. Monsieur Rochester asked me if I would like to go and live with him in England, and I said yes, for I knew Monsieur Rochester before I knew Madame Frédéric, and he was always kind to me and gave me pretty dresses and toys. But, you see, he has not kept his word, for he has brought me to England, and now he has gone back again himself. And I never see him.
Mrs. Fairfax? Mrs. Fairfax! Did you hear that loud laugh?
Some of the servants, very likely. Perhaps Grace Poole.
But did you hear it?
Yes, plainly. I often hear her. She sews in one of these rooms. Sometimes Leah is with her. They are frequently noisy together. Grace! Too much noise, Grace. Remember directions. She's a person we have to sew, and assist Leah in her housemaid's work. Not altogether unobjectionable at some points, but she does well enough.
Do the servants sleep in these rooms?
No, they occupy a range of smaller apartments to the back. No one ever sleeps here. One would almost say that if there were a ghost at Thornfield Hall, this would be its haunt.
So I think you have no ghost, then?
None that I ever heard of.
Nor any traditions of one? No legends, no ghost stories?
I believe not. And yet it is said the Rochesters have been rather a violent rather than a quiet race in their time. Perhaps, though, that is the reason they rest tranquilly in their graves now.
Yes, after life's fitful fever, they sleep well. Where are you going now, Mrs. Fairfax?
There's a letter I need sent to the post. I was leaving to fetch John for the task.
Give me the letter, Mrs. Fairfax. I'll take it to the post.
Are you certain, my dear? You're still out of step with these surroundings.
Indeed. out of step, and it's time I learned my way around.
As you wish. Mind the darkness. The hillside can become frightfully treacherous this time of year.
What am I supposed to do now?
Are you injured, sir? Can I do anything?
You must just stand to one side. Down, pilot!
If you are hurt and want help, sir, I can fetch someone from Thornfield Hall.
Thank you. I shall do. I have no broken bones, only a sprain. Oh!
Ah! I can't think of leaving you, sir, at so late an hour in this solitary lane till I see you are fit to mount your horse.
I should think you ought to be at home yourself. If you have a home in this neighbourhood. Where do you come from?
From just below, and I am not at all afraid of being out late when it is moonlight. I will run over to Hay for you with pleasure if you wish it. Indeed, I'm going there to post a letter.
You live just below? Do you mean at that house with the battlements?
Yes, sir.
Whose house is it?
Mr. Rochester's.
Do you know Mr. Rochester?
No, I've never seen him.
He is not resident, then?
No.
Can you tell me where he is?
I cannot.
You are not a servant at the hall, of course. You are...
I'm the governess.
Ah, the governess. Deuce take me if I had not forgotten. The governess. Oh! I cannot commission you to fetch help, but you may help me a little yourself, if you will be so kind.
Yes, sir.
You have not an umbrella I can use as a stick.
No.
Try to get hold of my horse's bridle and lead him to me. You are not afraid? I see. The mountain will never be brought to Muhammad. So all you can do is to aid Muhammad to go to the mountain. I must beg of you to come here. Excuse me. Necessity compels me to make you useful. Thank you. Now, make haste with the letter to Hay and return as fast as you can.
That was fast, miss. Mrs. Fairfax was a bit worried the journey wouldn't agree with you.
What dog is this?
He came with the master.
With whom?
With the master. Mr. Rochester. He just arrived.
Indeed. And is Mrs. Fairfax with him?
Yes, and Miss Adele. They are in the dining room. And John has gone for a surgeon, for Master has had an accident. His horse fell and his ankle is sprained.
Did the horse fall in Hay Lane?
Yes. Coming downhill, it slipped on some ice.
Ah, there you are, Miss Eyre. No doubt Leah has given you the news of Mr. Rochester's return.
Yes.
He's waiting in the drawing room, miss, and he insists on seeing you. Here is Miss Eyre, sir.
Let Miss Eyre be seated.
N'est-ce pas, monsieur, qu'il y a un cadeau pour Mademoiselle Eyre dans votre petit coffre?
Who talks of cadeau? Did you expect a present, Miss Eyre? Are you fond of presents?
I hardly know, sir. I have little experience of them. They are generally thought pleasant things.
Generally thought? But what do you think?
I should be obliged to take time, sir, before I could give you an answer worthy of your acceptance. A present has many faces to it, has it not? And one should consider all before pronouncing an opinion as to its nature.
Miss Eyre, you are not so unsophisticated as Adele. She demands a cadeau the moment she sees me. You beat about the bush.
Because I have less confidence in my deserts than Adele has. She can prefer the claim of old acquaintance, and the right, too, of custom. For she says, you have always been in the habit of giving her playthings. If I had to make a case out, I should be puzzled, since I am a stranger, and have done nothing to entitle me to an acknowledgement.
Oh, don't fall back on over-modesty. I have examined Adele, and find you have taken great pains with her. She is not bright, she has no talents, yet in a short time she has made much improvement.
Sir, you have now given me my cadeau.
You have been resident in my house 3 months?
Yes, sir.
And you came from...
From Lowood Institution.
Ah, a charitable concern. How long were you there?
8 years.
8 years? You must be tenacious of life. I thought half the time in such a place would have done up any constitution. No wonder you have rather the look of another world. I marvelled where you had got that sort of face. When you came on me in Hay Lane, I thought unaccountably of fairy tales, and had half a mind to demand whether you had bewitched my horse. I am not sure yet. Who are your parents?
I have none.
I thought not. And so you were waiting for your people when you sat on that stile?
For whom, sir?
For the men in green. It was a proper moonlight evening for them. Did I break through one of your rings that you spread that ice on the causeway?
The men in green all forsook England 100 years ago. And not even in Hay Lane or the fields about it could you find a trace of them. I don't think either summer or harvest or winter moon will ever shine on their revels more.
Who recommended you to come here?
She advertised, and I answered. I am daily thankful for the choice Providence led me to make. Miss Eyre has been an invaluable companion to me, and a kind and careful teacher to Adele.
Don't trouble yourself to give her a character. I shall judge for myself. She made a start of it by bewitching my horse.
Sir?
I have her to thank for this sprain. It is 9 o'clock. What are you about, Miss Eyre, to let Adele sit up so long? Take her to bed.
Bonsoir, monsieur.
I wish you all good night.
Get some sleep, Adele.
Oui, mademoiselle. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir, Adele. You said Mr. Rochester was not strikingly peculiar, Mrs. Fairfax.
And is he peculiar, Miss Eyre?
I think so. He is very changeful and abrupt.
True, no doubt he may appear so to a stranger, but I am so accustomed to his manner, I never think of it. And then if he has peculiarities of temper, allowance should be made.
Why?
He is not very forgiving. He broke with his family, and now for many years he has led an unsettled kind of life. I don't think he has ever been resident at Thornfield for a fortnight together, since the death of his brother, without a will, left him master of the estate. And indeed, no wonder he shuns the old place.
And why should he shun it?
Perhaps he finds it gloomy.
Mrs. Fairfax said I would find you here. I see you've grown accustomed to sketching.
Only during Adele's nap time. We've seen very little of you these past few weeks.
Indeed, Miss Eyre. Was my absence so noteworthy?
For Adele.
You examine me, Miss Eyre. Do you think me handsome?
No, sir. Sir, I was too plain. I beg your pardon. I ought to have replied that it was not easy to give an impromptu answer to a question about appearances, that tastes mostly differ, and that beauty is of little consequence, or something of that sort.
You ought to have replied no such thing. Beauty of little consequence, indeed. Now, ma'am, am I a fool?
Far from it. You would, perhaps, think me rude if I inquired in return whether you are a philanthropist?
No, young lady, I am not a general philanthropist, but I bear a conscience. When I was as old as you, I was a feeling fellow enough, partial to the unfledged, unfostered, and unlucky. But fortune has knocked me about since. She has even kneaded me with her knuckles. You look very much puzzled, Miss Eyre. And though you are not pretty any more than I am handsome, yet a puzzled air becomes you. because it is convenient, for it keeps those searching eyes of yours away from my face. It would please me to draw you out, to learn more of you. Speak.
What about, sir?
Whatever you like. The choice is yours.
I am willing to amuse you, if I can, sir. Quite willing. But I cannot introduce a topic, because how do I know what will interest you? Ask me questions, and I will do my best to answer them.
Ah, it is consistent. I put my request in an absurd, almost insolent form. Miss Eyre, I beg your pardon. The fact is, I don't wish to treat you like an inferior. I claim only such superiority as must result from 20 years' difference in age and a century's advance in experience. I have plenty of faults of my own, I know it, and I don't wish to palliate them, I assure you. I need not be too severe about others. I have a past existence, a series of deeds, a colour of life to contemplate within my own breast, which might well call my sneers and censures from my neighbours to myself. I started, or rather, for like other defaulters, I like to lay half the blame on ill fortune and adverse circumstances, was thrust onto a wrong tack at the age of 21, and have never recovered the right course since. But I might have been very different. I might have been as good as you, wiser, almost as stainless. I envy you your peace of mind, your clean conscience, your unpolluted memory. Young lady, a memory without blot or contamination must be an exquisite treasure, an inexhaustible source of pure refreshment, is it not?
Me va bien. Et mes souliers? Oh, et mes bas? Tenez, je crois que je vais danser. Messieurs, je vous remercie 1000 fois de votre bonté. C'est comme ça que maman faisait, n'est-ce pas, monsieur?
Precisely. And quand c'est là, she charmed my English gold out of my British breeches pocket. I have been green too, Miss Eyre. Aye, grass green. Not a more venal tint freshens you now than once freshened me. My spring is gone, however, but it has left me that French floweret on my hands, which, in some moods, I would fain be rid of. I called her my grand passion.
Sir?
Céline Varennes, the daughter of a French opera dancer. I placed her in a hotel, spoiled her lavishly with trinkets, servants, diamonds. She had only to name it, and it was hers. Until one evening I saw the two of them emerge from a carriage.
And then, sir? You followed them?
You never felt jealousy, did you, Miss Eyre? Of course not. I need not ask you, because you never felt love. You have both sentiments yet to experience. Your soul sleeps. The shock is yet to be given, which shall waken it.
No, sir.
I walked in upon them, liberated Céline from my protection, gave her notice to vacate her hotel, offered her a purse for immediate exigencies, disregarded screams, hysterics, prayers, protestations, convulsions, made an appointment with her vicomte for a meeting at the Bois de Boulogne. Next morning I had the pleasure of encountering him. Left a bullet in one of his poor etiolated arms, feeble as the wing of a chicken in the pip. And then thought I had done with the whole crew. But unluckily, the Varennes, 6 months before, had given me this fillette Adèle, who, she affirmed, was my daughter. And perhaps she may be, though I see no proofs of such grim paternity written in her countenance. Pilate is more like me than she. Some years after I had broken with the mother, she abandoned her child, ran away to Italy with a musician or singer. I acknowledged no natural claim on Adèle's part to be supported by me, nor do I now acknowledge any, for I am not her father. But hearing that she was destitute, I e'en took the poor thing out of the slime and mud of Paris and transplanted it here to grow up clean in the wholesome soil of an English country garden. Mrs. Fairfax found you to train it. But now you know that it is the illegitimate offspring of a French opera girl. You will perhaps think differently of your post and protégé. You will be coming to me some day with notice that you have found another place. That you beg me to look out for a new governess, eh?
No. Adèle is not answerable for either her mother's faults or yours. I have a regard for her, And now that I know she is, in a sense, parentless, forsaken by her mother, disowned by you, sir, I shall cling closer to her than before. How could I possibly prefer the spoiled pet of a wealthy family, who would hate her governess as a nuisance, to a lonely little orphan who leans towards her as a friend?
Oh, that is the light in which you view it. Well, I must go in now, and you too. It darkens.
Who's there? Mr. Rochester! Mr. Rochester! Wake up!
What?
Sir, there's a fire!
Is there a flood?
No, sir, there has been a fire, and I'm afraid in my efforts to quench it...
In the name of all the elves in Christendom, is that Jane Eyre? Who is in the room beside you? Have you plotted to drown me?
Somebody has plotted something.
What is it? Who did it?
There was an odd laugh. It woke me, and...
You have heard that laugh before, I should think, or something like it.
Yes, sir. There is a woman who sews here, called Grace Poole. She laughs in that way. She is a singular person.
Just so. Grace Poole, you have guessed it. Well, I shall reflect on the subject. In the meantime, I am glad that you are the only person besides myself acquainted with the precise details of tonight's incident. You are no talking fool. Say nothing about it. I will account for this state of affairs. And now return to your own room. I shall do very well on the sofa in the library for the rest of the night. It is near 4. In 2 hours, the servants will be up.
Good night, then, sir.
I knew you would do me good in some way at some time. I saw it in your eyes when I first beheld you. Their expression and smile did not strike delight to my very inmost heart, so for nothing. People talk of natural sympathies. I have heard of good genii. There are grains of truth in the wildest fable. My cherished preserver, good night.
You've been listening to part 3 of Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte and adapted as an audio play by Rachel Pulliam. Our cast, in order of appearance, include Bruce Busby as announcer, Alexandra Macedo as Leah, Elise Krewick as Mrs. Fairfax, Colette Feehan as Jane Eyre, Ossian Lentagne as Adele, and Peter Heimsall as Edward Rochester. Jane Eyre was directed and produced for Dream Realm Enterprises Showcase Classics by Rachel Pulliam. All sound effects were provided by freesound.org and Alexandra Macedo, with original music composed by Ross Bernhardt. The Showcase Classics theme was composed by Tom Rory Parsons. This is Bruce Busby, and I hope you'll join us next time for part 4 of Jane Eyre.
Coming soon to Showcase Classics.
Mrs. Fairfax, who is that woman Adele is speaking to?
That's Miss Blanche Ingram, one of the most finest accomplished ladies in the county.
She's not yet married?
No, but I dare say Mr. Rochester fancies her. They are always in each other's company.
Why did you not come and speak to me in the room?
I did not wish to disturb you. You seemed engaged, sir.
What have you been doing during my absence?
Nothing particular. Teaching Adele as usual.
And getting a good deal paler than you were, as I saw at first sight. What is the matter?
Nothing at all, sir.
Did you take any cold that night? You half drowned me.
Not the least.
Return to the drawing room. You are deserting too early.
I am tired, sir.
And a little depressed.
I am not depressed.
But I affirm that you are. So much depressed that a few more words would bring tears to your eyes. Indeed, they are there now, shining and swimming.
Showcase Classics is produced and directed for Dream Realm Enterprises by Rachel Pulliam.
This program is copyright 2021, all rights reserved, and is brought to you by Dream Realm Enterprises, warping to new dimensions.